On Pilot TV this week, we are up for another day in paradise with Sterling K. Brown and Shailene Woodley. As that show returns to Disney+, we're on the trail of a missing person with Kaylee Cuoco in Vanished on Prime Video and discovering the delight of British beaches. Thanks to the privatisation of the water companies in Dirty Business on Channel 4. Plus, Jennifer Garner joins us in this very studio later on to discuss Season 2 of The Last Thing He Told Me on Apple TV. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to Pilot TV, your essential guide to every show that matters. And with me are my two co-pilots, Kay Ribeiro and TV's Boyd Hilton. Hello.
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 That's all I have to say.
Well, this has been good. Thank you. That's good. What banter this is.
Well, you just said hello. What do you expect us to say?
Moving on then.
Yeah, James, it's your job. Work a little bit harder, actually.
Yeah, really?
Your job as ostensible supremo host of this podcast.
You didn't even ask us how we were.
If you want to get some banter with your co-host, you have to
work harder. So I need to take a leaf out of Graham Norton's book and really kind of like, I need to facilitate the
100%.
Banter.
Yeah.
Kay, you're looking well today. I like your knitwear. It's nice. Good. What have you been up to?
I will tell listeners that I've just done a Royal Television Society judging panel. That's what I've just been doing.
You have?
Are you sure you're allowed to reveal that fact?
I'm allowed to reveal that fact.
Oh, okay.
I don't think I'm allowed to reveal the cash crew.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
Really?
I did one this time last week. Well, not this time, but yeah, pretty much a week ago.
Okay. You win.
No, not at all.
Boyd has won. you can't tell us what your category was.
I haven't double checked the rules, but no, I think you're not allowed yet to reveal what category you voted for. But then our names will be printed prestigiously in the RTS booklets that you get when you go to the awards ceremony itself, Kate.
And crucially, they've got good form on spelling my surname right, so all is well with the awards.
And that's the main thing.
That is the main thing. Yeah, that's the important part.
How are you, James?
Yeah, have you judged?
I have judged nothing.
I mean, I judge you two
all the time, but
standard.
Well, I think we can safely say you judge everyone who comes into your path.
Yeah,
I mean,
sure.
on an hourly basis. So, yeah, that's not saying anything.
Really, but I don't get any kind of, you know, award for it or...
No.
Someone that we didn't judge, but I just saw out there was Mr. Gordon Ramsay, by the way. I forgot to flag to you guys. Yes.
Really?
He was in, I presume, to promote his Netflix show, which I've watched the first episode.
Being, what's it?
Gordon Ramsay, his name.
Gordon Ramsay.
Being Gordon Ramsay.
Being Gordo.
Very enjoyable, yeah. So
did he recognise you from your many encounters with him in the past?
No, because I was still on my Zoom judging panel.
Okay.
Otherwise, I'm sure he'll remember me from our two very memorable interviews we've had. So, but yeah, that's a bit of news, James. You wanted me to
You've brought the news. You have delivered. Thank you. I appreciate it. What have you been watching this week, hey?
Okay, so two things I have been watching, which are new, so they're coming out this week, is AI Confidential with Hannah Fry. So that's out on BBC One on Monday, the 23rd of Feb at 9 o'clock. And if you're like me, I just have been avoiding everything to do with AI, any shows about it. Actually, I use AI to transcribe and then I have to redo it all. But, you know, I'm not someone who necessarily has embraced it.
Unlike James, who is at the forefront of the AI revolution.
Axis of evil over there, yeah.
And regularly has meetings and seminars and et cetera, lessons in AI.
I'm just saying, I am currently working on a project to make Boyd redundant. this is inadvertently what I'm actually doing, genuinely. So the point is, as has been mentioned, I'm doing this little AI course and they've given me they said, you've got to have a task. You've got to have like a task you've got to do. So I said, fine, I'll do a task. So one of the people on my team works for Heat, your illustrious publication, and she said that there's a column in Heat, you know, could we, as a thought experiment, we're not actually going to do it, so crucially,
God,
this is not going to the magazine. Could we get it to do your job for you, Boydie? And so what we did was we programmed it to do it, and lo and behold,
how very dare
it
you?
Did.
He's already gone to the other side. He's already, it's like 1984.
And do you know why? Because it doesn't affect him.
Exactly.
And this is James all over.
Exactly.
This is James in a nutshell, guys.
It's like either Animal Farm or 1984. I can't remember which is more appropriate. But yeah, he's completely already, he's been subsumed.
And he's so happy about it as well. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Grotesque monster.
Exactly. And let me point out, by the way, I know what you're talking about, that column, but it's nothing to do with me, that column, at all.
No. So, and Boyd will never be replaced because his expert opinion is unique to him.
Well, you know what's interesting is I did a class last Friday at City University. I did a little
life
chat. It was not life drawing, no. I did a little chat about writing about TV and film in magazines.
Oh, wow.
In front of, and this class of would-be journalists and some current already journalists writing about TV and film.
I would like to listen to. Is that available for us minions to listen to?
No, I don't think it was recorded. No, it was a live appearance by me. Rihanna teaches a class. You know Rihanna, a friend of ours who often hosts Q&As as well. Anyway, why have I brought this up now? I can't remember.
AI.
Oh, I was talking about, you know, are there still going to be jobs in this field? And I made the point that for me, I'm lucky because I don't think I can be replaced by AI in specific. I can be replaced by loads of other things.
This sounds like a pitch to our bosses, by the way.
Yeah, sounds like a challenge for me.
It is completely. Because, no, I'll tell you why, though. Because pretty much none of the 27 years of writing that I've done for Heat Magazine is
on
online.
Yeah.
We've never put
anything. Didn't even exist when boys started doing on Slate.
Exactly. Mobile phones and the internet did not exist back in 1999. But it's true. We don't put any of my stuff on, or any of the stuff in the magazine online. Quite rightly, I think. You have to pay for the magazine to get to read our copy. Mm. And it's just not, doesn't exist. So I can't get, and AI is all about, isn't it? The one thing I do know about AI, and I don't know much, is that it's just.
Trawls the internet and
harvests. It trawls everything for what is there on the internet. If it's something isn't on the internet, and it never has been, it's not going to see it. It's not going to find it.
Can I just say something? I would not put it past James to single-handedly go back to the archives and type up every one of your reviews.
Do you think that's what he's been
doing?
So he can
do it. Yeah. So when you think he's
in
watching
between,
TV.
In between rewatches of The West Wing, he's digitizing maybe you're right. Horrific.
I call it the Boyd Bot 2000. It's my little AI Boyd companion.
Oh, God.
Instead of it's a Boogle, it's a Bay-Eye.
Very good.
Nice.
Anyway, I think, so I feel misguidedly, maybe, but in my own mind, I'm feeling like, I'm fine, I'll be fine, they can't replace me. Mm-hmm. If they want to literally replicate how I write, and then they can't replace me. Obviously, they can get
transcribe this podcast, but anyway.
Exactly.
Where were we at?
So
AI Confidential AI. With Hannah Fry. So I've been ignoring all these kind of shows, but I was reviewing it, and I have to say it's fascinating because she looks at the impact of chatbots, and both the positive and negative. So you see how it can help with people who are lonely and with people dealing with grief, but also the other side of things, like the influence that chatbot, especially like chatbot girlfriends, inverted commas, can have on people. So they use the example of British Sikh Jaswant Singh, who basically was encouraged by his chatbot girlfriend in his plan to assassinate Queen Elizabeth. It's informative, but it's so deeply disturbing how far it can go. It's also fascinating because it was kind of like looking at people who aren't vulnerable necessarily, but who are, you know, they, for example, one guy was working with AI, a chatbot, to work on his thesis because it was about AI, and made him so sort of paranoid that he had, you know, psychosis. So it's really fascinating to watch. That is on Monday, 23rd of February, BBC One at 9 o'clock. And the second thing I've been watching, James, is We Might Regret This. So that is on BBC Two, 10 o'clock. I handily haven't written down the day of the week, but it's of this week that the pod comes out. Boyd, I'm sure, will look it up while I talk. And that's the comedy. Pull your finger out, Boydo.
It's a Bay Eye.
Yeah. Pull your finger out, otherwise we'll replace you.
Boyd Bot 2000 has, in fact, already come up with that information. But I won't share it. You carry on, Boyd.
Shut up.
It's the comedy up. From Kyla. Is it Kyla Harris and Lee Getty? And it's about the tetraplegic Canadian artist Freya, played by Harris. And it's inspired by their friendship, Harris and Getty's friendship. And it's about how she negotiates life and love in London. I think we reviewed it.
Yeah, we reviewed season one, series one.
Funny, consistently funny and well observed. In this series, the first episode, she is newly engaged to Darren Boyd's character, and she's tellingly trying to, you know, like kind of elongate their engagement, kick that can down the road. But her managers, the Olivias, who are so annoying and well, exactly, you know, you can see their inspiration in real life. They're highly excitable and ridiculous, and they have decided she's going to have a collab with a bridal wear visionary, Beanie McElroy, played by Sophie Thompson, who is on excellent, excellent form as this kind of eccentric madster who, is going to design a dress for her. So anyway, get on board with that. It's We Might Regret This. BBC Two, 10 p.m. Boyd.
What day, Kay?
Tell me.
Well, do you know? No?
Wednesday.
Wednesday at 10 p.m.
Wonderful.
I can reveal 2026.
So funny. Get on it.
Would normally be in the also on section. We can, okay. we can do it in
anymore.
Both. We can do it in both sections. That's the way we roll.
Boyd, what have you been watching?
I've got one that's also in the also on section, which is, you may remember a while ago, in fact, it was on my birthday, 2025, 9th of December,
McCartney. 2020.
Yes, exactly. Well remembered, Kay. Susie, you do listen, unlike some other people in this room.
What was that?
Yeah. It's the Paul McCartney solo years documentary, Man on the Run, which is not a new, it sounds like it's a new limited series crime thriller, but that's just a pun on Band on the Run, of course, his classic album and song that he did with Wings, the band the Beatles could have been, if you've Alan Partridge, famous Alan Partridge quote, which I wheel out every opportunity. And it's a genuinely, I absolutely loved it. It takes you from the last days of the Beatles, how they kind of split up by stealth. They didn't really like make a big announcement or anything. They just kind of, he just kind of left the band really, and it all kind of like dwindled out. Is that a word? Anyway, it all kind of petered out, if you like.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yes, the Beatles.
Pulled out, really.
Yeah.
Or beetled out.
Beetled out. All of these things work. And then he created his first solo albums, and which were kind of very different to the last days of the Beatles. They were kind of very more simple, kind of direct affairs. And then he created the band Wings, the aforementioned band Wings, with his wife Linda. And how controversial that was, or how, you know, that was kind of like she was often patronised by critics and looked down upon by critics that she was part of the band, etc. But best of all, it's just, he still produced so much brilliant music after the Beatles. I mean, I absolutely love and adore the Beatles, obsessed with the Beatles from growing up onwards. But this is a really good reminder that he also, after the Beatles ended, did some absolutely brilliant solo stuff. Maybe I'm Amazed, one of the greatest songs ever written, is a Paul McCartney solo classic, Band on the Run as well, that song. And just and they kind of, the way they use that music, there's often quite long live performances they show, sometimes in full. They just utilise the music to the full whilst getting testimony from him and everyone who worked with him. And it's brilliantly done. Very good.
What channel?
It is on Amazon. It's on Prime Video.
You keep on doing that, Boydo.
I know, but it. I still say they've got to tell their talent working on all this stuff not to call it Amazon.
Every Prime email
Video.
Comes in bold with, please do
please
not
just
say...
call it Prime Video. It's on Prime Video on Friday, the 27th of February, 2026. Then I wanted to mention on my weekly, this is a weekly slot effectively where I talk about how brilliant industry is, but I make no apologies about it because episode 6 just aired as we're speaking now, and episode 6 was the one I was waiting for people to catch up on because it has some absolutely outrageous Lord Muck Kit Harington sex action that just arrives. And what I loved about it was, among many other things, is that the first 15 minutes builds up to this sequence that just kind of suddenly arrives in this kind of like underground sex club type situation. And then the titles kick in. So it gets that way, that far into the episode in a complete...
How many minutes do you say?
I think it's 16 minutes
in. Wow, that's a long time.
It is a long time, yeah. And suddenly the credit arrives, industry. And it's so brilliantly done. I love a late credit anyway. As going back to the OA, of course, the all-time classic where the episode one title sequence arrives, I think 17 minutes in, pretty much, and then the show ends.
I would appreciate if it came how long was it, an hour?
Yeah.
I want it on the 58th minute.
And I know what you mean.
To show real guts.
Show real commitment to the late credit sequence ploy. But it's, as an episode, just it's got so much going on apart from that as well. Like incredible machinations and it just reaches peak industry. I think I think it might be the best episode, or at least my favourite episode of the whole thing so far, including series one and two. There's so much going on. There's so many twists and turns and double crosses and people using what other people have done to kind of blackmail them. It's just brilliant. Industry continues to be fantastic. I wanted to mention, Would I Lie to You? I mentioned last week, the Graham Norton Show. So in the light entertainment world, which I know isn't core values of this podcast, but nevertheless, there was a classic episode of Would I Lie to You, the best panel show on TV with Jason Isaacs.
Oh, wow.
And Richard Osman. But to see Jason Isaacs on a TV comedy panel show was just kind of weird.
How did he do?
He did really well. I mean, he did what he always does. He's a brilliant raconteur and anecdotalist. So he kind of told some brilliant classic Jason Isaacs anecdotes, which may or may not have been true in the Would I Lie to You format. But he did very well. And he bounced. Richard Osman was really good on it as well. So that was fun. And finally, Jonathan Ross's chat show is back talking of Jonathan Ross. You're about to host a thing with him. I'm furious and jealous. And he's back with his chat show. And you remember I was talking about how with Graham Norton, they had a brilliant lineup the other week with various people who turned out to have great chemistry together. The people from Wuthering Heights, Amanda Seyfried, and others. Well, Jonathan had a great lineup last week. We had Neve Campbell from Scream, the new Scream 7, Archie Madekwe, who's a brilliant young actor who's been nominated for the BAFTA Young Person Award, whatever that's called. Do you know what it's called?
Is that the Rising Star
that's
Award?
It, the Rising yeah. Star. Which, by the way, by the time this is, will have been decided.
Yes,
the BAFTA
this weekend.
This weekend, upcoming. So, yeah. But it was all great. And they did like a scream competition between them. So they all screamed. And Alan Carr, obviously Alan Carr and Jonathan.
Alan was on it.
Yeah, Alan was on it. So Alan just phenomenal. He's even better. He's even more brilliant as himself than he was pre-Celebrity Traitors. So to see these two Celebrity Traitors and genuine real-life friends, they've known each other 30 years, Jonathan and Alan together on the show was brilliant. And Alan was just in fantastic, tremendous form, doing his own scream in front of Neve Campbell, who is, of course, the expert. So, yeah, I just wanted to mention all of those things. And I believe I have. James, what about you?
I've been watching Broadchurch.
Oh God!
Oh my
yeah.
gosh!
I am.
Whack.
I am wading through the first series. I'm right near the end now. Unsurprisingly, it's really good.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, it's very. But also, it's just. And we were talking about this when we discussed on Pilot Plus Olivia Colman's role yes. in The Night Manager season 2. She's just incredible. Absolutely yeah. incredible. David Tennant gives spectacular bellend as well.
Yeah.
It's just. It's a lot of fun.
Did you take any notes?
Thank you. I could never hope to reach those heights. I'll just have to stick with where I am. I know my level. But I'm really enjoying Broadchurch. I finished How to Get to Heaven from Belfast and was not disappointed at all by the finale of that. That
good.
Was great. And the other thing I did was, you will recall that I didn't watch the first episode of Fallout Season 2 when we reviewed it on this podcast because I couldn't get access to it. So I thought, look, I watched the whole of Season 1. I should go and watch Fallout Season 2. And a lot of... I don't know if it was from emails or the subreddit or even just social media generally, but several people have told me that it is ridiculous that I'm not watching Fallout because it's one of the best shows on TV. It's right up my alley. It's sci-fi. It's all of these things. So, fine. Right. Watched it. Watched the first episode of Season 2. Bored to death.
Oh, dear.
And I had this with Season 1 as well, where I watched the whole thing, but I was low-level bored all the way through it. Like, I just, for some reason, and the fault is almost certainly mine, but for some reason...
Almost certainly.
Yes. Like... I just can't get on with it. Like I just, it doesn't seize me at all. And so I'm not entirely sure I'm going to watch the rest of Season 2 of Fallout. I think I'm maybe kind of done. Mm-hmm. And given that I've played the games and I like the genre and I love the people in it, I can't quite put my finger on what it is. I think it's partly tonal. I think there's a silliness to it, which bothers me. I don't like retrofuturism. I think that is definitely true. I can't get into it. So yeah. I'm abandoning
that,
Fallout.
I believe that makes three of us.
Mm. Yeah. A full house.
You, Kay, have been diligently yeah. watching
Fallout. Binging
Fallout.
A lot has changed, but not that.
No. Here's my question to you about Broadchurch, though. You
yes.
do know there's two more series.
I do know
so
that,
are you going to
yes.
carry on, crack on with
it? I'm certainly thinking about it, yes.
Interesting.
So
yeah.
this may be my watching for the foreseeable future.
Yes.
But I'm enjoying it enormously. Like, initially, when I started watching it, it was almost homework. Like, it was almost like, oh, I've never watched this. I really should watch it. I should have seen it.
Yeah.
And I watched the first episode and I thought, oh, this is good. Like, it's really well put together. But I felt a little bit like, I'm not, you know, am I going to, like, it's no foundation, is it? That's what I'm saying. But then, by the time I got to the end of episode 2, I was like, okay, now I'm just obsessed with all of these people. Because it does a really good job of rounding out all of the residents of this sort of small West Country town and just getting a feel. And obviously, you know it's leading you down the garden path with episodes early yeah. on. When you're like, oh, it's that person. You're like, no, it isn't. You're just making it look like it is. But you really enjoy the little journey.
Which is what happens in yes. all whodunits.
Right.
Yeah.
So there we go. I'm exploring the genre.
Yeah.
But it is so, so
which
well
channel
done.
Was it on? I can't
ITV.
Remember.
ITV.
This is
yeah,
what I thought.
I know.
This is what I thought. When he was talking, I thought, first of all, like, I commend you for going back and watching something even though it's 100 years old. Because I
ITV.
Do that. Yeah. But the fact that it's on ITV and suddenly you're waxing lyrical, I think you owe ITV an apology.
A formal written apology.
I want an oral one right now,
okay,
please.
Yes.
Come on.
I apologise, ITV, for Broadchurch and many of your other shows, including Unforgotten. Fabulous.
Oh, well, yes.
All I would say, I think, I remember doing a couple of Q&As about Broadchurch.
Before Kay started taking them off you.
That's exactly. Right, okay. Exactly. Back in the glory days.
Yeah.
And it was definitely regarded as a step up for ITV, definitely, because it is beautifully shot and directed. James Strong, I think, directed it, who did done loads of award-winning things. He's a brilliant director. But it definitely felt like they were going for being more cinematic than you were used to, in I think it's fair to say, in an ITV peak primetime thriller. That was part of its kind of unique appeal. You had this brilliant cast and a beautifully shot, very ambitious visually show.
Either way, James has apologised and all is well with the world.
Yes, of course, yes. 100%.
I've addressed the Broadchurch-shaped hole in my back catalogue of things.
I'm wondering where that hole was coming.
Wow.
Bloody hell, James.
Sorry.
Steady
what
on.
A thought.
Should we move hastily on to a listener question?
Yes. Do you know what?
Please, God.
At your Broadway.
Okay, right. This week's listener question comes from Andrew. And Andrew Roche says, just finished Steel on Amazon. No, it's Prime Video, Andrew. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. And yes, James, the crooks did look like Klingons in episode 2. The term warp speed was used as well. So someone is clearly a Star Trek fan. But this got me thinking about other shows that referenced another TV series in theirs. My one is the Cylons walking past Dirk Benedict in the opening credits of the A-Team. I remember that. Any other ideas? P.S. Boyd, thanks for organising my TV viewing for Christmas Day. You did a good job.
Oh, good.
There you go.
Wow.
It's a question. Does it take you out of a show if it references another show? How do you feel about it?
I feel okay.
Kay doesn't care. Right.
No, I feel okay because it's like when you're trying to believe in these characters, they would be watching shows.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So it's like, that's, I love the authenticity of that.
I think the Dirk Benedict one is a slightly odd one, isn't it? Because that's like, that's a bit of an, oh, look, I was in this. You know, that's.
Oh, I didn't even get the reference. I was
right.
Yeah.
Okay. Because he was also in the original Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah,
and
sure.
Sure. But you're right. Like if it's a believable contemporary set show, that they would be talking about things that are part of pop culture makes perfect sense.
It'd be
sense.
Weird if they didn't.
Right. Yeah. Mm. Absolutely. I agree.
Oh wow.
Boydie, do you agree?
Yeah. Totally. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Excellent. Let's move on. No.
This is a hard thing to answer, though. Go on. What have you come up with?
I've just Googled it. I Googled it before I came in because I was very aware that otherwise I didn't have an answer and James would rap my knuckles.
Well, luckily I have asked BoydBot2000 to come up with some examples for me and you've done a great job, Boydie.
Oh,
so I will read those out in a second. But Kay, what did you come up with?
Well, I was just going to go with the top one because it was Friends related and I thought you'd enjoy it.
Yes.
James, which is that the episode where they go to London for Ross's wedding.
Yes.
And apparently Joey is feeling homesick. When they get back to his hotel room, he gets really emotional when he catches an episode of Cheers and he hears the theme tune and he gets all the emotion stuff. So yeah, that is something I've just read on the internet right now.
Right. That is Kay's one answer that she has just got off Google. You know, it's we got the extra mile
from,
for our... I told you, they're from BoydBot2000,
exactly.
Who is working diligently to give me examples. But so did you ever watch Community? I mean, you would have watched Community, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But Community, Danny Pudi's character, Abed, mentions in one episode, he talks about being an extra on Cougar Town. Once you remember Cougar Town?
Yeah.
Right. And then he literally is an extra on Cougar Town. So it's just like, I can't remember which one comes first. I wonder whether the actual, in my memory, BoydBot may be wrong about this, but in my memory, he actually makes a reference and then is on Cougar Town.
I would prefer it that way.
Enacting the scene he talked, which is absolutely wild. And it really reminds me of, and you will remember this, remember Scrubs?
Yes.
Neil Flynn, who played the janitor. There's a whole thing about the janitor was in The Fugitive, the film The Fugitive with Harrison Ford, because Neil Flynn is a cop in The Fugitive.
Oh.
And they use the footage from The Fugitive in Scrubs to illustrate the point. It's really funny.
Oh, topical, since Scrubs is coming back.
Indeed it is, but it's very meta, but I thought that was quite funny. But apparently Cougar Town and Community kept referencing each other multiple times on it. And as I mean, to be fair, Community is one of those shows. It references so many other shows during its run.
Yeah.
But I thought that was quite a nice little back and forth, a little sharing of things.
Very good. Boydo, what about you?
I am going to apologise for using the example from Seinfeld, but
my God!
Oh, come on! I mean, it is.
Go on.
There was an episode in which it revolved around Jerry watching Melrose Place. So at the time, Melrose Place was kind of like a byword for a soapy, melodramatic, slightly kitschy show. And it kind of like kind of showed that a grown man, you know, it's kind of like aimed, let's face it, more at women, you know, than men. And but the whole thing was, oh, Jerry, do you really watch Melrose Place? And he secretly watches it. He doesn't tell anyone. Doesn't share it with Elaine. And she accuses him of watching it secretly on the sly. And in the end, he takes a lie detector test, which is all about whether he watches Melrose Place or not.
And was he?
And yeah, he was. Yeah, yeah. and they incorporate the theme tune and everything, and it's absolutely hilarious. There's loads of examples in the office, both UK and US office did. Obviously, David Brent had loads of references. One of the things that was brilliant about it at the time, because it was a faux documentary, was that obviously someone in his position who's obsessed with himself and saw himself as being a comedian, you know, an all-round entertainer. So references to Lenny Henry abound and Comic Relief and Monkey. Remember Monkey, the PG Tips character is always there in the background.
Knitted monkey.
Yeah, and they talk about that.
I used to have one of those.
So that, and then the American office was full of it as well.
Oh, Battlestar Galactica, they took a Game of Thrones.
Yes, yeah, all the way through. They'd refer. I think it, when it's in that mockumentary format, it allows that to happen, and it does make it seem more real. I think because what more do people talk about than anything in the world than TV? Mm. I mean, everyone talks about.
Hello,
TV.
What do you think we're doing right now?
Exactly. Hello. So yes, those were my examples.
Yeah, like I recall Stargate SG-1 used to reference Star Trek quite a lot.
That's good.
And Farscape mentioned all sorts of stuff, Star Trek, because the whole point was that he was a guy from Earth in space.
Yeah.
And so he would reference lots of sort of 21st century pop culture stuff. Well, 20th mainly.
And actually, what I've just remembered is that I watched Vladimir. This could have been in what are you watching section, although obviously I drivelled on for an extended period anyway. But I've been watching Vladimir, which we will be reviewing soon, the forthcoming Netflix show with Rachel Weisz and Leo Wardell. What was that expression? Facial expression? Remember, well, cameras are on. We'll catch you all the time.
So this is something that came up before the show started. Yeah. That Kay realised that when Boyd is talking, she pulls faces. Yeah.
I pull
and they're now captured on camera.
Well, which I don't really know what it was.
I was referencing the fact that I said before the pod that when you talk, I'm not going to show any emotion on my face. I was just clearing my emotion from my face.
So you were doing a gesture.
Yes. I didn't realise you were going to stop though mid-flow.
Brilliant.
When Boyd talks, I pull faces, and then if James says something bellendy to me, then I'll pull a face at Boyd. Yeah. And I didn't realise, I didn't quite remember.
You stopped me in my tracks. Anyway, in Vladimir, there are quite a lot of pop culture references, which I thought were really smart. Yeah. And I'm not reviewing it yet, obviously, because it's heavily embargoed. But it is coming up on Netflix soon.
Thumbs up. Thumbs up.
Can't possibly say.
It's embargoed.
The other things I wanted to mention in this is there was the crossover between Friends and Paul Reiser, Helen Hunt sitcom Mad About You. Do you remember this?
Yeah.
Because Lisa Kudrow plays a character in both.
Mm.
And that's when they decided that it was actually her twin sister was the character in Mad About You. So you had the crossover episodes, essentially. Yeah, so Ursula, who was a character in Mad About You, then was a character in Friends as well.
Okay.
And Helen Hunt and the actress who plays her sister in Mad About You appear in one of the pre-credit sequences of Friends as well.
Mm.
And they think Phoebe is Ursula.
I've just remembered what the pop culture reference I was thinking of in Vladimir is, which is Sex and the City. There's a Sex and the City kind of joke, which is quite clever. That's all I'll say.
Okay.
Leave you to spot it when it arrives.
Very excited for that, Boydo.
Boydo just breaking embargoes left and right there.
I think it's all within the...
I think the best reference, though it does involve a film...
No.
And it is Isaiah Whitlock Jr., the late Isaiah Whitlock Jr., who played Senator Clay Davis in The Wire, famous for his shit. You know, like you say, he used to have the extended, which apparently was a hymn.
It's you doing it that's giving me the...
Right, okay. Well, he used to go shit like that. And that was apparently an Isaiah Whitlock thing rather than a Clay Davis thing. But it became a part of the fabric of The Wire. They actually reference it in The Wire, but it was the actor's thing. And he's done that in other things. So he did a film called Cedar Rapids where he references that he does a great impression of Omar from The Wire, and he was in The Wire.
Oh, that's good.
And he's talking about The Wire, so that's pretty meta. But it is a film, Kay. I'm so sorry. So we probably can't talk about Cedar Rapids.
The Wire is not a film, though.
No, but Cedar Rapids.
It's valid. I know, but I think it still works.
So it's got a toe in both worlds, I would say. But yeah, no, I quite like it. I think it adds a dose of realism for exactly the reason that you said, that we all talk about TV so much. It's weird when characters in fiction don't talk about popular culture.
As I said originally.
Someone once said that the only problem with EastEnders was they didn't talk about EastEnders.
Quite funny. Yeah.
Okay, should we have a guest?
Yes,
let's have a guest. And this week's guest is Jennifer Garner, who returns to her role as Hannah Hall, a woman whose husband vanished, only for an entire mystery to unravel to his whereabouts in season one of The Last Thing He Told Me. Mm-hmm. Now, season two just arrived on Apple TV, and suffice it to say, things are not exactly back to normal, as we all know, because we watched it for last week's podcast before realising it was embargoed. Now, as we record this, She has not yet come into the studio to do this.
Which is why I held my cross fingers at Boydo.
Yeah.
So we really hope that she turns up tomorrow in this studio to talk to Boydo.
Otherwise, a lot of egg on James's face.
Well, you two abandoning me, leaving me to my own devices with Jennifer Garner. Yeah, let's just hope it's all fine.
I don't want to get involved in between that chemistry, right? Just you can handle it.
Exactly. Yeah, the tension will be, you could cut it with a knife, so you know, we don't want to get in.
I'm sure she'll remember the time when I visited her on the set of the Ricky Gervais film that she starred in, The Invention of Lying, I think.
Yes.
So I did.
Did you have a chat with her then?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, see, it's just two buddies catching up.
Effectively, yeah. I'm sure. Yeah. Obviously, because I'm me, I am going to mention it. Well, it will be a test of her.
Oh, hello. If you don't clang in an email, in an interview, like, what's the point?
If she doesn't wrap her arms around you and go, Boyd, I'll be very disappointed. And because it happens in the studio, we will catch it on camera.
Yes.
Oh, is it all being filmed as well?
Oh, yes, Boydo.
Yeah, Boydo.
It's all being filmed.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. You're like catnip for the camera, it's fine.
You are. It's great. It's going to be wonderful. Can't wait. So here is Boyd, we hope, talking to Jennifer Garner. I hope it went well.
Hello, Hi, Jennifer. Boyd. Welcome to the Pilot TV podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
It's an absolute pleasure. How are you enjoying your trip to London so far?
Love it, always. I'm so thrilled to be here, yes.
Yeah. I must say, I was lucky enough to be in Santa Monica for the Apple Press Day when they revealed their slate, and you were there on stage with your colleagues talking about the new series.
You mean just a week or two
just
ago?
Just a week or two ago, two weeks ago. So I feel like I know you anyway already from that.
Well, we do, yes.
How was that event for you? And you got to kind of talk with your co-stars and your colleagues about the new season of The Last Thing You Told Me?
I mean, there were so many people there. It was a little bit chaotic. But what was odd about it is that it was very dark backstage. And so you would be scuttling by and I would say, wait a minute, was that Amy Adams? So there were all of these colleagues backstage that I was kind of seeing them in a shadowy outline and hunting down so I could give them a proper hello.
It was properly star-studded, wasn't it? Yeah.
I mean, it was quite star-studded, wasn't it? Yeah,
absolutely,
it was lovely.
Yeah. So you're talking about the new season of The Last Thing I Told You. And at the end of season one, there was a 5-year time jump.
Yes.
Which now is this fully established as season two begins. Yes. How would you, that's quite a bold thing to do, a big time jump like that. How does that leave the characters at the beginning of season two?
Well, all you see at the end of season one, there's this jump where you see that, oh, they have been living safely. Mm. I mean, okay, so they're in quite a bit of danger. This woman, Hannah Hall, and her stepdaughter, Bailey, played by wonderful Anne Gowrie Rice. Hannah's husband, Bailey's father, disappears. They spend the whole first season trying to figure out why and then realizing that they're in quite a bit of danger themselves and they don't see him and they only see him in memory. Then there's they make a deal to keep themselves safe. There's a 5-year jump cut and suddenly the husband appears. And as we begin, that's it. Season one, done.
Yeah.
At the beginning of season two, we overlap that scene and then we follow Owen and see a bit the husband and see a bit of what his life has been like, which is really interesting. Why he's been on the run, how he's stayed hidden. And meanwhile, you realize that the reason he showed back up is that Hannah and Bailey are again in even more danger than they've been in before. And you realize that in the past 5 years, what you didn't see is Hannah preparing for this inevitability. Right. And it's kind of incredible to watch how skillfully she has put their lives quietly in order to get themselves out of danger, although danger follows very closely.
Yeah, you use the phrase competence porn.
Yes.
Which I think is so accurate, isn't it? Because she is in charge. She knows she's facing this really difficult situation, but she's planning as much as she can. She's looking after her stepdaughter. She's extremely competent at what she's doing.
She's extremely competent, and she's fought really hard to become competent. She's a wood turner by trade, so she's not someone who has ever had to get herself out of danger before, but she's a quick thinker, and she's a very meticulous person, and she's got them completely organized. And yes, this idea that watching somebody so good at what they're doing is actually very relieving in this day and age. It's why we love The Pit. It's why we love, you know, and so she has that the first couple of episodes, you really see all of it go into play and into action. And it's very soothing, I think, and very satisfying.
Now, what's not quite so soothing, there is a brilliant scene where you have a fight with a big guy in the season premiere. Mm-hmm. And you told the story at the Apple event, an extraordinary story. You met that guy before, you worked with him before, years ago.
Yes, Salah. We fought on a film called The Kingdom, which was directed by Peter Berg. Pete Berg is a bit of a, like, he's a noir kind of director. And so Pete had this thing where he wanted it to be such a real scrappy fight. And Pete knew that I didn't mind fighting. I liked to fight. And so he told Salah, first of all, Salah is, I believe, from New Zealand. So he had Salah do the haka before we began fighting, just to me. I was on the ground and he had him perform looking down at me. And it was just like, I'd never seen it before and certainly never live. Yeah. So I was...
like he wasn't scary enough already.
It was quite intimidating. Yeah. And I felt like, screw you, Pete Berg. And so then he said to me, I want you to do anything you can to survive. And he said to Salah, get her. Do anything you want to do. She can take it. Don't like actually put her in the hospital, but fight her. Like... Yeah. Restrain her. And so I climbed up on Salah's back and I was, I mean, my mouth was so dry. It was like a real, my brain thought I was in a real fight and I bit his ear. And there's a picture somewhere, it's a Polaroid of, you know, a scab on his ear the next day. And was like, well, sorry.
You are the Mike Tyson of your generation.
People don't know that I actually, Mike Tyson and I have that in common.
Yeah. And what was brilliant was at the event, Nicolai Costa-Waldau was genuinely astonished by this story, wasn't he? He was like, kind of like a Paul, should you be arrested, he would say. I think he said at one point.
He was a little horrified, yes.
A little horrified.
Yeah, but Nikolai knows what to, he can fight as well. He doesn't mind having a sword, does he? And he would use it if he needed to.
Yeah. Now, I've met Nikolai and he's incredible fun. He seems to be incredible
fun. Isn't he
great? Yeah. But, I mean, you don't have that many, so far, you don't have that many scenes with him for obvious reasons because the whole storyline is he's left you behind. But he must be incredible fun to work with, right?
I will say that we do end up having to deal with each other in this second season in a way that's actually, you know, you would think like these people have been apart for 5 years and here they come back together and it's this they run into each other's arms and it's this love story. And it's interesting because how does that actually play out? And it was the source of many, many conversations on set. And I think it's kind of cool to watch it. Their relationship have that they have to reorganize themselves and also with the stepdaughter with whom Hannah has now become very, very bonded and close, that changes everything. But you know, Nikolai or the Owen reappearing changes everything between the two of them as well.
And he has a spectacular amount of facial hair, I have to say.
He does.
How did he find that?
He did not appreciate that beard. He was not a fan of that beard.
But it's realism. I think it's fair enough, isn't it?
Well, he was in disguise.
Yeah, yeah. You also got new cast members, Judy Greer, Rita Wilson. You worked with Judy before. Rita Wilson's a legend. That must have been great getting them involved.
Rita Wilson is a legend, and for good reason. She is in one episode. She plays Hannah's mother. And I think Rita would have had to have been 10 or something to actually be my mother. But, you know, we play with women's ages on
screen.
She's so magnificent and real and heartbreaking. She's heartbreaking in the show. Yeah. And then we also have Luke Kirby and John Noble and really wonderful cast.
Mm. I have to mention to you, I have met you before. You're not going to remember this. 17 years ago on the set of The Invention of Lying.
Oh, my goodness.
Do you remember that?
Of course, in Boston? Yeah.
Ricky Gervais's film.
Oh, do you?
Yeah. How was that for you at the time? And have you followed Ricky's career since then?
Oh, my gosh. I'm such a huge fan. I went to see him do his stand-up after that at some point. He's hilarious. I mean, obviously, he's hilarious, but he's brilliant and irreverent. And I'm always cheering him on.
Yeah, yeah. Now, the last thing you told me, it's the kind of thing, even though it's based on two novels, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a sequel to the original novel. You could take it further. Do you want it to be a returning show, kind of like comeback? Or do you think it's kind of, it feels it should end after two seasons? Do you have a strong feeling about that?
Well, the audience will decide that.
Right.
I mean, it was meant to just be one season and then, and if you haven't watched it and if you haven't read the books are, the amazing thing about Laura Dave's writing is that she writes with this energy that is like, there's a twist at the end of every chapter that keeps you turning the pages and it makes you stay up later than you mean to. And that really translates well onto screen, but we don't care if there's just action. What she's equally brilliant at are the relationships and the people and the depth of relationships between the people. And so that is what everyone loves to play. That's brilliant in The Last Thing You Told Me and in the sequel, The First Time I Saw Him. And it feels to me, if the audience is so inclined. It feels to me that there's one more natural season, and I would love to play it, especially now that Judy's involved. And I never want to leave Anne Gowrie Rice. I want to work with her every day of my life. I love her so much.
She's fantastic. Yeah. Yeah. It does feel like the second season is even more action-packed and thrilling. Oh. And you've ratcheted up, I feel like.
Without a doubt. Yeah, no, without a doubt. And the fun thing is that so far the journalists we've spoken to who enjoyed the first season are like, oh, I like the second season even more. And I hope that is true for the audience. But I don't know. You never know. Journalist, you can never tell. Are you guys telling us the truth?
Oh, I'm totally telling you the truth. I wouldn't even mention it if I didn't like it yet. But it's definitely ramped up.
Very excitingly.
Yes, it's a thrill ride, isn't it? And finally, you managed to go to Paris, or at least it's set in Paris. Now that's not green screen, right? You are really actually in Paris.
Oh no, we
went
to Paris and Marseille. Yes.
did you say to the producers, I would quite like to go to somewhere really nice in Europe to film some of season two?
I couldn't believe that we got so lucky. It was incredible to be there. It did add so much just to the. Obviously to the scope of the show, but also there's just nothing like being on location. And I really only work in LA. So to have those couple of weeks leaving and going to Paris and to Marseille, where I'd never been before, I'd been to Paris, not Marseille, added so much to the drama underneath.
Yeah, it does feel like it's bigger, bolder.
Yes, better. Yeah,
yeah. Absolutely. Jennifer, Ghana, thank you so much. Great to see you again.
Thank you so much. I love being here. Thank you. Thanks,
cheers.
Boyd. Yeah, cheers.
That was Jennifer Garner, and time now for this week's news. Boydie, what do you have for me?
Well, what struck me recently was that there have been quite a few cast announcements for The White Lotus new season, and we haven't really
covered them. I've missed.
Well, now the cast is taking shape. It looks absolutely fantastic. It could be Sandra Bernhardt was recently confirmed. I love Sandra Bernhardt. You remember she was in the glory days of Roseanne, when Roseanne was the biggest show on TV.
Who did she play? What, the sister? No.
No, she was kind of in it as Roseanne's mate. Basically.
Oh, okay.
And she's a fantastic. I've seen her doing stand up, Sandra Bernhardt. She's a fantastic actress and stand up and comedian. And she's anyway going to be in it. There's Chris Messina, who's really good in you recognize him from the Mindy Project and Air, the Nike film that Ben Affleck directed. Did he? I'm imagining he directed it. I believe he did.
Yes.
Alexander Ludwig, who's in Vikings and the Hunger Games, and you'll recognize him. He's very much clearly like if you look
Bjorn Ironside.
Yeah, you'll see he's like a hunky guy, the kind of guy, there's always like one or two of them in The White Lotus. Steve Coogan, which was announced.
What?
Yeah, Steve Coogan, incredible.
Shut up.
Yeah, someone else wrote, like, we didn't know that it was the casting was so right until you see it, and you see Steve Coogan, in The White Lotus, it's going to be inherently.
Partridge on Holiday.
Partridge on Holiday, exactly. Wouldn't it be incredible if you actually did Alan Partridge in The White Lotus?
Crossover.
So tempting. And Helena Bonham Carter.
Oh, wow, she'll be glorious. Recently,
again, like you're like, of course, Helena Bonham Carter should be in The White Lotus. And it's set, and they seem to have been confirmed, it's set in France on the French Riviera, but in fact, different bits of the French Riviera. So it seems to be a little, I mean, I don't know if this is true, but it's been reported that it'll be in different locales rather than one set hotel or whatever. I assume there will be a hotel in it, but it seems to be more freewheeling anyway
from
what people are saying.
It was a little bit like that last series, if you know, they had the moon party.
And then, you know. Yeah, good observation. Yeah, true. So maybe it's not such a big format change. But yeah, Bonham Carter, Coogan, Ludwig, Messina, Bernhardt. It's all adding up to a fantastic season four of The White Lotus. And if they could just get their fingers out, film it now, get it edited, all wrapped by, I don't know, Christmas? It'd be good if we could see it.
I am weirdly quite looking forward to this, given that I've never watched seasons one and two.
Because you're a bellend, yeah.
I mean, yes, perhaps.
Oh my God, say what you see.
Yeah, but I'm quite excited about this. I have no intention of going back to watch season one and two, but I'm quite excited about this fourth season.
Yes, didn't we do? We did a spoiler special last year.
Oh yeah,
which James wouldn't contribute to.
A point of order, Your Honour. I think you're fine. Not only did I contribute, I watched every single episode.
Oh no. Do you know what? I'm sorry. I'm thinking of Only Murders.
Yes.
Apologies.
Only Murders and the Boring, which I had nothing to do with.
Mm. Oh, so you did watch in the end?
Yes, I watched all of season three.
Three. Oh, okay.
I just haven't gone back and watched one.
Oh, fine. Okay.
Because it's, you know, an anthology, so it's all good.
Yeah. Although it does feature characters, of course, as we discussed in the previous shows, yes.
Okay, I want to tell you some casting news now from Michaela Cole's new upcoming drama. So we know that joining her will be Tandoi Newton, who will play Anya, Maxine Peake as Helen, Danny Sapani, is that how you say it, Sapani?
I think so.
Okay. As Ernest, and Shruti Gatwa as Darren.
Darren! Sorry.
Oh, yeah, no.
It's Pavlovian
true.
At this point.
Isn't it? Oh, gosh.
We should explain because no one will necessarily know this. It's like whenever, so this is the thing we do on this podcast. This is going to be very hard now to not cut out. Whenever we make a mistake on the podcast, whenever there's an
every
error.
Every 30 seconds.
Yeah, which is every 30 seconds. One of us will shout, Darren! And that is the key word, which means that there's something that needs cutting
out. Because our editor's called Darren and he probably hates his name now because we shout it so much.
Exactly that. So like whenever he hears his name, he's probably like, oh, God, I've got to cut something out. Like it's become Pavlovian.
Well, I can confirm. Don't worry, it's just shooty this time. Anyway, so Cole will play a British Ghanaian novelist who's on the run, both from herself, her life, her partner, and that weird guy at her book talk. When she ends up in Ghana, her ancestral homeland, she finds herself submerged in an altogether different world amidst new friends, fresh joy, and many different and nuanced relationships. She also discovers secrets, lies, and difficulties, as well as denial, and it leads her to question everything about herself and her heritage and family. Would you say that was very well read, Boyd?
That was very well read.
I would say it wasn't because so many times I put the intonation in the wrong place and I just tried to style it out.
I think you did a good job of styling it out.
Thanks.
The interesting, this was a, wasn't this a...
Yes, cast announcements, and I haven't told you who they are in the synopsis.
Oh, that's fine. I mean, it's most interesting that they're in it, like the fact that, you know, Shooty Gatwa is in it, etc. Yeah. That's
Maxine Peake.
Oh, Maxine Peake. Yeah. Did you mention Maxine? You didn't mention Peake before?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, okay.
You just forgot to mention us.
This is so much fun.
Yeah, this is...
Yeah, sorry.
But what's interesting is, I think that was a press release, that was a start of filming press release, wasn't it?
Yes.
That's what it was.
It absolutely, and actually, do you know what? The first sentence starts that I'd written on my thing is, filming is underway, but
filming's
I ignored
underway.
That.
For me, this is a bit of a blow, because I thought this film had been underway already for this show. I thought this was quite imminent because it was in the, you know, like all of the channels have their own slate announcements, you know, and I'm sure I saw it in the BBC slate for this year. So maybe it's still going to be this year. Maybe they're filming it now, you know, they can finish it and get it all sorted by...
Listen, I think Michaela Cole has earned the right to take her sweet time. So,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, 100%. But no way would I dare to suggest anything but that.
Yeah,
but
stop trying to rush Michaela, boy.
Yeah, boy. Yeah. So like, greedy. God. Greedy.
In a similar vein, though, and in fact, I believe it's the same, was Various Artists Limited, the production company who made I May Destroy You, Michaela Cole's previous masterpiece. Their new show looks, I'm genuinely excited about this, called 2 Weeks in August. Have you seen this lineup?
No, but I remember discussing this news story last year. It's the friends that go on holiday, right?
Yeah, it's this friendship group that goes on holiday.
I'm so excited about this.
It's written and created by Catherine Shepherd, who worked on Sally Forever, the amazingly rude Julia Davis series, and The Shrink Next Door. And it's about a group of friends who connect and go on this holiday together, and obviously bad stuff happens as well. It's got Jessica Rain, Damian Maloney, your favourite.
Yes, Bergerac.
Damian Maloney, I've got an invite to a Bergerac screening. Are you hosting that one, Kay?
I actually am.
Oh my God. Can I just tell you, joking.
No, can I just tell you something really funny? Is that I mentioned watching the trailer last week on, I think it was Plus or something, and then that evening I got back, so they hadn't heard it, and they were like, oh, are you free? And I was like, yes, and this is really weird, but anyway.
Just to say, you've got to give me a list of the things you are hosting so I can avoid them. And listeners, this isn't, I'm not, I would happily go and see these things, but Kay doesn't
like it. We've got a gentlewoman's agreement.
Carry on,
Boydo, sorry.
Anyway, Leila Farzad, the brilliant Leila Farzad from I Hate Susie, and most recently How to Get to Heaven from Belfast.
Yeah.
She's the spoiled actress. Remember in the beginning of that show, absolutely brilliant cameo or even, you know, supporting role. Hugh Skinner, the great Hugh Skinner from Fleabag and Mamma Mia, and who'll be soon in 2026, the comedy from the people who gave us 2012. He's in it. And Dolly Wells, who's just brilliant in everything, from Dracula. She was in
I cannot wait for this show.
Tom Goodman Hill, Baby Reindeer. It's got a brilliant cast. And there's...
Do we have a date yet?
Nicholas Pinnock, I haven't finished.
Sorry, it just felt like it was going on.
It's fine. I am going on. I mean, you know, some less of a short casting announcement than your one for Michaela Cole.
I'll be honest, anyway, the thing that the Boyd bot came up with was much more concise.
Yeah, I bet it was. Do we have a release date? I think it's going to be soon on television, but no specific date.
Put it in your diaries, gang.
Yeah,
soon.
Soon. Well, you know, you may be sarcastic, Kay, but...
Can I just tell you also about a trailer I watched for A Woman of Substance? Did anyone see that?
I haven't seen it, but I'm excited about this show.
I am as well. My mum's gave me the book last year, which I still haven't read. It's massive, but she said I would enjoy it, and I think I will. It's basically, from what I can tell from the trailer, revenge-filled upstairs-downstairs period drama, and it's based on the best-selling novel by Barbara Taylor Bradford. It stars Brenda Blethyn and Jessica Reynolds as the two versions of the same character, Emma Hart, who is a housemaid turned mogul, a daughter, a mother, a lover, a fighter, and a 20th century feminist icon who refused to know her place. I will be like worshipping at that altar. I'm very excited about it. It's basically Downton in overdrive, and it will be coming up, I think, this year, right? And Channel 4.
I think so. The interesting thing about that project is the original, there's an original version of this book, adaptation of this book, which was 40 years ago on Channel 4. It was one of Channel 4's first ever dramas, and it was a massive phenomenon. It was like partly kind of almost what made the channel back in the day. I remember very clearly it being this absolute phenomenon, and everyone watched it because it is quite soapy.
Is it quite daring?
Quite daring, exactly, yeah. So I'm very interested to see what they do. And in fact, it's being adapted by Catherine Jakewaites, who's a very funny, talented person who I've met many times.
Very good.
Did either of you, let's be honest, Boyd, see the Spider-Noir trailer? Or trailers?
No.
Plural. So this is a show that's coming to Prime Video soon, and it is spun off the kind of Into the Spider-Verse, Across the Spider-Verse films in which Nick Cage voices Spider-Noir. And in this, it's live action. He's going to be playing Spider-Noir. But these are available in black and white and colour. So you can choose to watch it in black and white or colour, and the trailer is available in either black and white or colour.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's clever. That's
I mean, is it clever? It's like, and call me cynical, but I feel
cynical.
A little bit. Thank you. I feel like it is supposed to be a noir, and if you watch the black and white trailer, it really captures that sort of genre feeling. The colourised version feels a lot like, we're going to put this out in colour so that younger audiences who will 100% not watch something in black and white will be prepared to sit through this.
Yes.
100%. Yeah. But it's true, though, because, yeah.
It is true.
There's some. I mean,
it's hard to fault them.
It's a bit of a generalisation, but I think some younger people, in fact, are sophisticated enough to be able to deal with a black and white film or TV show. But yeah, I get it.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Some of them are still reading magazines as well, paper print.
In the very, very early days of Heat, very, 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 very early days, no, so none of these people are working for it now, apart from me, the then editor-in-chief or editor was so against people black and white films, he thought it would put people off, our young readers off, that he wouldn't let us give 5 stars to any black and white film. So Citizen Kane, you know, one of the greatest films of the time. Yeah, we weren't allowed
to give it 5 stars.
Because it was in black and white. Yeah, Casablanca, you know, like
bloody
literally
hell.
The greatest films of all time.
I don't even know what to do with
that
information.
Yeah, I had to do with that. This is 28 years ago, to be fair, but yeah, it was extraordinary.
Wow. That's quite the bombshell, boy. Yeah. I think we have to end news there.
Yes.
I don't know how we can top that.
Fair enough.
That certainly is a bit of news.
Yeah.
Let's move on to this week's reviews. And first up this week, we have the return of Dan Fogelman's Paradise on Disney+. And this is a show that is predicated on a big twist, a very, very big twist, in fact. And honestly, it's going to be impossible for us to talk about this without touching on the big twist from season 1. So if you have not watched season 1 of Paradise and have any inkling that you might possibly one day do so, and you don't know the twist that happened at the end of, and I cannot emphasize this enough, the first episode of season 1, then you are probably going to want to skip this review. I strongly suggest that you do. So maybe look at the show notes, look at the timings, and skip forward to the second review. Still with us? Great! So this second season picks up where the first season ended, except it doesn't. Instead, it goes all the way back to before the incident and introduces a new character in the form of Shailene Woodley's Annie. Boydie, tell us more about the show, which has been described as The West Wing meets Fallout, one of which things I like.
It's more The West Wing meets... What was that? There was actually... wasn't there a Stephen King adaptation thing called Under the Dome or something like that?
Yeah, there was, I've seen it. Yeah, would you say this is like that?
Well, I mean, to the extent that, spoiler alert, the big spoiler is that the powers that be in America have dealt with the cataclysmic, world-ending, apocalyptic weather incidents by building a massive...
Fallout shelter/dome.
I think it is a dome, isn't it?
Well, it's a cave, yeah.
So, you know...
Bunker.
Gigantic.
Yeah. It's
town.
A giant bunker. Like, it's a town inside a mountain.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's the big.
But you don't know that that's what it is until the end of the first episode. You think it's a regular town, and then you don't realize that this is, it's all for Kay's benefit, really. They suckered her in with like a political drama and then dropped the sci-fi on her.
It worked.
Yeah.
It worked.
I have to say that the first two episodes, I watched the first two episodes. The first episode is all about Shailene Woodley's character, a brand new character who holds up in Graceland, Elvis Presley's old home.
Which is where I'd go during the apocalypse.
You would. Mm.
And to be fair, she was working there.
I'm about to say she is not that outrageous an idea, because her character worked there and was a tour guide, basically, in Graceland. So it's a nice, fun idea in theory. And I was initially, this is fun. Yeah. You know, just start your new series by not even referring to anything that occurred in series one, really. There's not a recap. I don't know whether
there is a recap, but it's at the beginning of episode two.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. That's my point. Hmm. So there's no recap at the beginning of episode one, but there is one for episode two, which is, again, underlining the fact that it almost feels like it's a sudden standalone episode.
That's exactly what it is. Yeah.
Yeah. As your first episode of your new season, and then to compound my, shall we say, doubts about what they've done with this second season, episode two is all about what happens to our main character, who was the bodyguard to the late president of the United States, and is sent, and it goes off at the end of season one to find his wife.
Sterling K. Brown, yes.
Sterling K. Brown, sorry. Yes. So he goes off to find his wife, and literally the end of season one ended with him climbing aboard a jet, going into the cockpit and going, right, I'm coming to get you, kind of thing. And then in episode two, he's crashed, basically. Spoiler alert. The whole thing, this is one big spoiler alert, listeners. And the episode two shows you all about what happens to him.
Yeah.
So they utilize the fucking flashback, flash forward, sideways, jumping time thing constantly throughout the first two episodes. But they're both, in a way, like kind of big, quite daring ways of dealing with the fact that we're starting a second season of this show. Neither of them are like, oh, right, we're going to ease you back into what happened with last season. Instead, we're going to hit you with these two kind of, two standalone episodes away, albeit the second one does tell the story of what happened to him after we saw him climb aboard that plane in the end. Anyway, this is a long-winded way of saying, I felt like both of these hours were, initially, I was like, yeah, okay, show us what happened with this woman who ends up, how she ends up connected to the guy who she finds in the forest, B, what happens to him with this gang of kids, etc., in episode two. But I also thought it was slightly indulgent, slightly irritating, and definitely too long. They both felt like they could have told the stories they wanted to tell in episodes one and two of season two of the show in about half the time. Mm. They could have even, I wouldn't even go as far as to say they could have done them in like, you know, like a 5-minute flashback if they really wanted to. Yeah, they could have done.
Come on.
They could have done. How much actual story is there? This is my question. How much actual story is there in episodes one and two of this second season that they could have easily dispensed with another way? I enjoyed them. I'm not completely negative about them. As they were going on, I enjoyed them, and the Shailene Woodley one's interesting, and it's a bit like, it reminded me of the Last of Us famous episode with the two guys, but it's not, wasn't as good though, and the relationship that forms in this first episode isn't as kind of interesting and intriguing and well drawn as the
I disagree with you.
Yeah, I didn't. I almost wonder whether it's a reaction to The Last of Us. It felt so inspired by it.
PTSD.
PTSD. PTSD.
You.
Oh, me? No, it's not
like
so
your
that.
Reaction to this is because it reminds you of that.
Oh, no. It does remind me of that, but I wonder whether, you know, they were genuinely influenced by that episode in making this episode. Mm-hmm. It felt like, possibly to me, it felt so similar tonally and on what it was trying to do, but not as good, as I say. But I enjoyed them. Don't get me wrong. I enjoyed them. But I think on balance, I would have preferred just to go straight in and pick up where we left off and have a normal episode of this show.
So would you go in straight on two, because that is sort of dealing with it? Or
yeah, but
you...
even two annoyed me a bit as well. Like, again, they showed the present day and then they flashed back to explain what happened to him. And it became very extended, slightly claustrophobic. This is what's happened to his character now when after the plane crashed. When something is 8 episodes long, 8 hours or 10 hours or whatever, I am now on guard for like, are they really milking this story? Are they stretching this narrative? And it did feel to me just like they were stretching it already in episodes one and two of the show. It is really brilliantly made, don't get me wrong. Everyone's great in it. Shailene Woodley, brilliant addition to the cast. She's fantastic. But I do have my doubt. I just have doubts about the way they've started this second season.
Doubting Thomas over there. I've got to be completely transparent. So I think I watched one and two of the first series and then I just didn't go back to it, not for any reason other than like we watch 9,000 shows a week. And so I was quite relieved that it went on this standalone story. Although I was half thinking, wait, was she in that first series? Mm. And particularly was Link, I don't know, was Link in the first series?
No.
Okay, so they're brand new characters. Yeah. In which case, just as a standalone, I really enjoyed it. I really thought her character was interesting. I think she's really strong in this. And I really, so she's in Graceland and she works there. And then there's this sort of like the super volcano. I don't know what it actually is. Super volcano, is that what it is? And she hunkers down. And then there's this sort of, these bikers who come to Graceland. One of them is played by Thomas Doherty's name's Link in this. And what I really liked about that is that it sort of confounds your expectation, because I thought they'd be acting a certain way, their behaviour would be a certain way, they'd treat her a certain way, this, that, the other. They really didn't, and I actually enjoyed that because I was like, oh, okay.
So does she, doesn't she? She's surprised, but she's expecting them to be violent.
Presumably because she's watched The Walking Dead, but yes.
Yeah, something like that.
I really liked the fact, the way that Link and Annie sort of communicated in their dynamic. I found it, in fact, really moving. So I think she was wonderful in this, and she conveys so much with her face. I know that sounds a stupid thing to say, but she does. She's like
face acting,
good face acting. She's like
she's always great. She's great,
tortured.
Yeah.
You don't exactly know why, but it just feels like it's very layered.
Absolutely, I agree with all of that. I don't know.
I'm not trying to change your mind. I'm just saying, as a standalone episode. I really liked it. I obviously do need to catch up on the first series. I'll do that.
The most interesting thing for me was seeing inside Graceland. I thought it was really interesting to see what it actually is like. Presumably, like, they've completely recreated it, or maybe even, I don't know, filmed there, find out. But I was fascinated by that because I always wanted to go to Graceland because I'm a big Elvis Presley fan.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. So you're Elvis Presley. Wow.
I strenuously disagree with you,
Woody.
I thought that first episode was fantastic. Mm. And I also thought it was a masterclass in how to introduce a new character, because they take that entire episode and just give you a capsule episode backstory for that character. So by the time she interacts with Xavier in episode two, you know so much about her and you're so invested in her that suddenly you care about what's happening. And I think the reason why that matters is it's been a while since season one. And it's really hard to top season one, because season one was a very specific little contained mystery where, like, the plot gradually unfolds as the series goes on and you start to understand more and more what's happened. And then that fantastic episode where it goes back and it shows you how the apocalypse happened is amazing.
Yeah, brilliant.
It would have been really hard to top that. And actually, I think going straight from the end of that and picking up where we left Xavier, I'm not sure it would have had the right impact. I actually think I needed this little palate cleanser episode, and I thought it was wonderful. And actually, when we went back to Xavier, I was disappointed because I was so invested in Annie's character and where she was going. Yeah. I was like, I want to watch this show. This show, I'm much more into this. And it takes until, because I've seen the first three, it takes until the third episode for you to go back to the bunker and see, you know, pick up where we left off. But I really, really like this new kind of like wasteland thread, which is, I guess, this we're going to have a split narrative, I guess, in season two. We've got the wasteland thread and we've got the bunker thread. But I thought that Graceland episode was genuinely wonderful. I loved it. Absolutely loved it.
Wow. The only bit I didn't like, can I just say, is at the very end, I'm not going to spoil anything, there's a moment with her and the last couple of scenes, I felt that's quite cheesy, I have to say. Do you agree?
Yeah, a little bit. Mm. Do you know, I enjoyed it. I'm sounding more critical of it than I really intended. I really enjoyed it while it was on. I just kind of like, at the end, the second episode actually annoyed me more than the first, to be fair.
Okay,
because I really did want to go back to the what's it called?
The bunker.
The bunker. And I didn't think I really thought his story, that hour, could have been really much shorter and it felt very extended to me to get to the place it needed to get to by the beginning of episode three.
I see what you're saying about episode two that from a narrative point of view, it doesn't cover a lot of ground.
No.
Whereas it's 45 minutes, whereas the first episode is an hour long, but it covers an incredible amount of ground.
Sure.
Because you essentially relive the entire apocalypse from Charlie Woodley's perspective.
Yeah. I'm kind of completely conflicted about it, to be honest, because on the one hand, when I first saw it, I was thinking, this is a classic example of bold, you know, peak TV, because they're completely forgetting everything that happened in season one to give us this standalone thing, and it is a brilliantly bold thing to do.
To start a new season with a capsule episode is wild.
I salute it for that boldness, to use that word that I use constantly. I was thinking at the end of it, I was like, okay, but and yet is it slightly self indulgent? So
I suppose they've earned their right.
It's episode two I have more issues with, in general. But I still, it's still, a, yeah, it's a really good thing to do in theory and half in practice. I just had some slight doubts.
It has to be said, I love this show. I really do. I think it's just, it keeps you guessing. It moves really quickly. It's got great characters in it. This is a gourmet burger sci-fi for me.
Yeah, I'm not sure if episode two moved that quickly.
Episode two does need to do some heavy character lifting. Yeah. But I know what you mean. Episode two, if I'm honest with you, episode two has a touch of The Walking Dead's about it, where you've got them in a slightly bad post-apocalyptic scenario, and it just, I mean, shambles along, if you will.
Yes.
But there is an element of that. And I think having sat through 100 million hours of Walking Dead, I think I'm kind of immune to it at this point. But there really was a hint of that in two. And three, I'm glad to say, picks up again. Whether this series works or not, I still couldn't tell you. Mm. Because it ultimately depends on where these kind of conspiracy implant. And there's already another conspiracy starting. Like, how those resolve, how satisfying that is, remains to be seen. But based on the strength of that capsule episode and the introduction of Shailene Woodley's character, I'm very, very excited to see where this goes, and I'm looking forward to watching the rest of it. And they have provided me with every episode except the finale, which is maddening, but there you go.
I'm definitely going to watch the whole thing as well.
You've got your doubts.
I have my doubts.
We got it.
Yeah, doubting Boydie.
Boydbot
2000 says a star, very excited. So, you know, that's weird that you don't agree.
No, that is bizarre.
Okay. Paradise then, Disney Plus.
Monday the 23rd of February 2026.
Fabulous. Next up, we have Dirty Business, a factual drama on Channel 4 that is less a dramatization of events than it is a kind of dramatic reenactment used to better convey information. And I've got to be honest, it's shit. Literally, of course, because it concerns the fact that since the privatisation of the UK's water, we've had illegal sewage discharge dumped into the rivers. We've had corporate negligence, we've had cover-ups and other fun things like that. And this show has David Thewlis and Jason Watkins leading the charge in a kind of Mr. Bates versus the post office with more E. coli, if you will. Mm. This is based on 10 years of investigation. It also stars Asim Chowdhury, Charlotte Ritchie, and, you know, it's quite topical at the moment, obviously looking into how the water companies have been behaving since Thatcher privatised them and why that was a terrible idea. This is, I would argue, less an entertaining bit of TV drama than basically a series just designed to make you furious. Mm-hmm. So who better to be furious than our resident angry ferret, Kay Ribeiro?
Yeah, James is absolutely right. I mean, this will make your blood boil. David Thewlis and Jason Watkins play Ash and Peter. One is a retired detective and the other is a Oxford professor who basically start investigating why their local river, the River Windrush, is being polluted. They notice the difference and they start piecing it together. And it's like kind of these amateur sleuths. It's really interesting. Well, one is a detective, of course, but like, you know, how, first of all, the dynamic between them, I think it's quite interesting, but also how they go about figuring it out and then holding these companies to account. It's a dual timeline, so we kind of see that all happening in 2016, and then we go back in time to, I think it's 1999, when a family, the Preens, they're from down from Birmingham. They're on their holidays, they're having a fun time on the beach, and unbeknownst to them, their eight-year-old daughter contracts E. coli 0157, the most deadly strand of it, apparently, and it doesn't end well. Aside from that, we also meet Asim Chowdhury's character, who is a whistleblowing sewage worker, and he works with that duo to kind of show them that actually there's, you know, these old Victorian waterworks aren't fit for purpose. They are run down, broken, the sensors don't work. And then when the sewage builds up and they can't do anything about it because everything's broken, not working, then unfortunately they just press the button that lets it all out into the rivers, which is so shocking. And I have to say, like, at first, what this does is it melds news footage with dramatized parts. And at first, I actually found that jarring, and as well as the, you know, the flip between the two timelines. But actually, it's really impactful because when you see real life footage / photos of the water before and after, and even the dramatized, like with Asim, like he's walking through the sewage. And I mean, I have to say, make sure you're not eating at this when you're watching this, because it is awful. I mean, it's reality, but it's like obviously quite gross to see.
Yeah.
But when you then piece that all together and you're sort of seeing all that footage, and then you're seeing the, like, a dramatized version of like what is happening to this family and the impact on the cost of human life and the environment, and the kind of excuses and rationale of the water companies, and the Environmental Agency, I have to say, which I was so shocked at, because as I think Thulis's character says, they are the sewage police and they are the ones that are above, you know, they can bring cases. They don't have to go through the police. They can just bring those cases. And actually, and so you're thinking, okay, great. What do they do? And then you see a moment where basically because of like cost cutting or like trying to, you know, cut the red tape or whatever, they give the power to the water companies to kind
police
of
themselves.
Police themselves. Yeah. And like the workers at the Environmental Agency are rightly aghast and just being like, what? And they're like, yeah, yeah, no, it's fine, it's fine, it's fine.
It's Charlotte Ritchie.
Yeah, Charlotte Ritchie.
Very genuinely funny, yeah.
Yeah, because she's like, yep, yep, okay, cool. And it just walks off. You're like, how can that be? And like, yeah, it's an amusing moment, but actually the reality of that is shocking. And to see that this is happening in United Kingdom is unbelievable. So I would say this is a really impactful, powerful, factual drama that everyone should watch, everyone should get really fucking angry about, and everyone should, I don't know what to do, like write to your politician. What, I don't know.
Not quite.
Yeah, like, because this is unacceptable.
Well, because it's a Mr. Bates type thing, in that obviously what they did with that show is they took something that was factual and a huge injustice, and then through drama they communicated not only the facts but the outrage to the public. Mm-hmm. And obviously it had an effect. And I think, you know, probably unabashedly, they are trying to do the same thing here. They're trying to educate the public, but also show them why they should be annoyed. And switching back to 1999, I think, is important, because this isn't just their shit in our rivers. This is like, this girl died. Mm-hmm. You know, like, there has been a cost in human life as well. And I think that really makes you pay attention in a way that, you know, oh look, isn't it funny? There's poo in the rivers. Like, it's not funny. And I think that's important. But I think it's interesting the way they've done it, because it isn't really what you'd call a drama. It's not like Mr. Bates, where it is, you know, if someone told you it wasn't based on a true story, you'd accept it as a television show, just a piece of drama. This really is information dump. Like, it's like, like, you have title cards interspersed with almost vignettes of dramatic reenactment, and some of them are deliberately funny, with Asim Chowdhury, Charlotte Ritchie. They've chosen these people deliberately, and some of them are just like, here is information, we are packaging it for you in a way that it is entertaining and easy to digest, but this is what we want you to know.
It's like
a documentary without the documentary bit. Like, yes, exactly that. It's a really weird, it has a very weird vibe to it, but I do think it's effective. And I think because of the nature and the time period and the drawn out way in which they get this information, I think trying to fully dramatize it, like Mr. Bates, for example, I think it would have moved too slowly and it would have been too boring. I actually think they're getting to the heart of it means that it sort of tickles a part of your brain that's looking for factual information like a documentary, but it's also entertaining like a drama. So it actually works on both levels. But I think it's smart. I think it's very well put together.
I also think, like, you know, obviously the impact of Mr. Bates, I just think, and we were all rightly outraged for the postmasters, mistresses. I think the fact that this applies to everyone, right? Everyone's like, you know.
Well, not least of all, because this specifically talks about the sewage treatment plant, which affects Burford and Bourton-on-the-Water, which where my mum used to live. Mm-hmm. So it's just like, I was like, oh, I know that place. Like, and it is genuinely shocking what went on, the cover-ups, the lies, the fact that they were essentially routinely just dumping sewage into the rivers. Mm. Because ultimately, and, you know, who'd have thought with privatisation, when you make profit the primary motivating factor for a utility, they are going to cut corners to, I don't know, make profit. And that's basically what's happened here. So it is set up to go this way.
We are a first world country. This is outrageous.
Yeah, it's not ideal.
Yeah. Anyway, Boyd, what do you think?
It was very interesting. Yeah, you're right. It's definitely, like, if you compare it to, it's difficult not to compare it to the
Mr. Bates,
supposed to the post office, which was a very traditional bit of storytelling.
Yes.
And a kind of, and reason why it was the biggest show of that year, and had a life changing effect on. Although, of course, they're still waiting, unbelievably, still waiting to get proper compensation. Hundreds of those postmasters. But I think the reason it had such an impact was it was a very traditional bit of storytelling. It established the characters. It took you chronologically, pretty much straightforwardly, through the ups and downs of the campaign and the climax of the campaign and their eventual court triumph, etc. Whereas this is, as you say, it switches back and forth. I mean, talk about tonal shifts. I mean, the 1999 stuff with the kid, the poor kid who gets E. coli and dies, is devastating. And then it literally, and you get, you know, the her parents, you know, in tears, and the dealing with that tragedy, and then it literally jumps to as clicking. The years go by on screen back to more recent times when you get Asim Chowdhury, as you say, deliberately, you know, a comedic actor by and large, telling them how the fuck this all happened in the first place, and how the impact that the billionaire company, American company, that took over the thing, and what happened since then, etc. So it couldn't be more different in a way. It's a bit of agitprop kind of political activism thing. This feels more like that they had to find a different way of telling the story. And I think it is really effective. I think you know, it really hits home. It's interesting because Channel 4, if you watch, I don't know about you, I watched it on the Channel 4's portal.
The disclaimers.
And they're the long disclaimers that they're including in that, almost like there's some kind of legal, they've been told legally.
Yes. So I've got it written. So they have one on screen, which will be on, you guys will see when you're watching, but also on our portal, they had a whole,
long, basically, you know, a long paragraph from the Environmental Agency kind of denying the kind of what went on in the show we've just watched. So it's interesting that they're having to make these, although when you read, you know, the Environment Agency quotes, it's interesting that it's all a bit vague, because they say stuff like, recently we've done this, you know, and well, how recently, you know, they don't seem to be saying in these long explanations that Channel 4 have included for legal reasons that the events depicted in the drama didn't happen. They're kind of saying this is our this is kind of what we're saying. It's different now, if you like, and we're dealing with it. And so it's a legal minefield, but it absolutely is. It makes for it is an unusual way of telling the story, but it's still gripping and infuriating. Is the point? Absolutely, unbelievably.
I hope it gets as many eyeballs as Mr. Bates on it.
I don't think
please
it will.
I know it won't. So please, listeners, please watch it and spread the word.
Listeners,
The only thing I will say that did bother me is one of the scenes when they're talking about when the girl's in hospital, they're talking about E. coli, and the doctor says, and then the virus is doing that. And I was sitting there biting my tongue, because of course E. coli is not a virus, it's a bacteria. And I just felt like, and then they correctly say that later on. So unless I missed something and there was a secondary infection, that really, really annoyed me.
Okay. I think you're losing focus a little on the important stuff.
I'm just saying.
Yeah. Maybe, I think also, isn't he just explaining it to the parents as best
by being wrong? That's a non-traditional medical tactic.
Okay. Interesting. Let's not get caught up, because we've only got 7 minutes to go, apparently.
That's true. We're running out of time. Dirty Business then. Channel 4, when Boydie?
Monday, today, if you're listening to this, on Monday, the 23rd of February, Channel 4, 9 p.m.
Please watch it.
Fabulous. Finally this week, we have Vanished on Prime Video, which stars Kaley Cuoco as an archaeologist whose boyfriend, played by Sam Claflin, vanishes on a train through the south of France, leading to an international espionage conspiracy and what probably qualifies as the worst holiday ever. Boydie, does Kaley Cuoco do for trains here what she did for planes in The Flight Attendant?
Almost. Let's just say this boldly and in massive levels of originality and kind of fantastic invention begins with this kind of like motorbike chase. This motorbike arrives to kind of go and the guy on the motorbike to go and kind of have a fight with Kaley Cuoco, who's in hold up in some
washing blood off her hands.
Yeah, washing blood off her hands. It's all very exciting and interesting. We're plunged into the middle of the story. And then, wouldn't you know it, on the screen it says 1 week earlier. A device that I've never seen used
Boyd,
before.
Here we go.
Do you know what happens now is that when I saw that, I found it jarring and I instantly think of you now.
Well, I instantly think of Russell T. Davis, who was the one who pointed out to me years ago when he made It's a Sin, he was asked by the companies to get it commissioned. They wanted him to agree to start in the middle of the story and then go back to the beginning. He insisted on not doing that. And that's why I keep going on about it, because he was the one who pointed it out. And once it's pointed out to you, every single program, certainly on the streamers, as this is a Prime Video show, has to happen, begin with the beginning, the middle or end of the story, and then flash back to 1 week earlier. And I like the way in this one, I'm sorry to pick on this show, but it just brought it all home to me. They do it in that way. So the screen goes to black, that she's about to be attacked. This is the very first scene, listeners and watchers on YouTube. Kelly goes about to be attacked by the motorbike dude, we assume it's a dude. And then and then it cuts to black, and then it goes at 1 beat. Week beat early, as if it's a brilliantly invented thing.
We've invented this new device.
You know, you weren't expecting this, were you? Yes, I fucking was. Anyway, So there's that to deal with. Then you get to meet this couple, and then it's another beautiful couple. It's a little bit like 56 Days. I mean, Sam Claflin and Kelly Kirk are a bigger star, well, much bigger stars than the
and have
Frankie
better
Unders.
Chemistry.
And they do have pretty good chemistry.
Yeah, they do.
And there is like, it's a bit like we're going to have them shagging to show you what great chemistry they've got. They're not husband and wife. They're kind of boyfriend and girlfriend, if you mm-hmm. like. But you get to see them. So establishing their relationship, and then the whole trick of the whole premise of the show is that they're going on a lovely train trip to Paris. Is it? Is that where they're going?
South of France.
South of France.
I think they go through Paris, but they end up in South
France.
And
then they go to South of France. He takes a call in the quiet carriage, and he's told in uncertain terms by this elderly lady that he should not be speaking on his phone.
Get out of the quiet coach.
He goes off to take this phone call and then fucking disappears, which is a great, to be fair to the show, it's a good premise.
Yes.
I'm fully on board with the premise. It's the kind of premise I like.
It felt plausible as well, up to a point. Well, so
that someone would kill him for using a phone in the quiet coach. Absolutely.
100%.
And I would be that murderer.
Yeah.
No, I really enjoyed it up until, like, because I thought, oh my God, you see how this would happen. Yeah. You know, he suddenly disappears. And I mean, there are a couple of bits where after that, you're kind of,
Of course there are.
Obviously, would that happen? However, can I just say, I really still enjoyed watching Kaylee trying to piece it together. She's very watchable. She, like, you know, as she was piecing it together, I was like, oh yeah, because I would do that. I was thinking, actually, it's quite authentic, the things that she does, largely. I mean, apart from a bit where she happens to, out of a whole massive, like, landscape, find a footprint. I mean, insane. Oh, yeah. But yeah, I would say it's very entertaining.
Oh, it's 100% elevated by the fact you've got Kaylee Cuoco and Sam Claflin in it. And she particularly, she is brilliant in everything
and
Claflin's she does.
Cheekbones. I mean, they deserve their own credit.
Claflin's still very handsome and main role recently in that advert. What's the advert for that he's in? You know, he's driving the car and it's to the woman and it's all very exciting. He's very good in that. But I did enjoy it. It's only four episodes, so it feels very kind of brief and almost a bit, you know, like four episodes these days is nothing. But
boy, don't
but
my favorite,
no, no, no.
Last time you were like eight
I'm
episodes
about to say,
too long.
No. Paradise. I'm about to say, having watched episode two, I'm fully in favour of the pace. This really is pacing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It has to be.
It has to be. And I'm fully in favour of its four episode limit.
Well done for the restraint in not making this 8 hours
long. Good locations as well.
Yes. Lush locations.
Good locations.
Yes. Locations. A lot of it's shared with that Leo Woodall Apple show as well.
I thought so,
which is in Marseille.
The mathematics one,
really
right?
It really looked very, very similar.
Prime something.
Prime target.
Yeah. Prime target. Yeah. James, what did you think?
I thought it was fine.
In the next 3 minutes.
I thought it was absolutely fine. I didn't love it. Thought it was interesting. It's very similar to The Flight Attendant, but it isn't quite as good.
Very similar to a lot of train set stuff that I wanted it more to be.
You do love purely, a train.
I do love a train.
Yeah, not enough on the train, you were thinking.
No, exactly.
Yeah, but I did enjoy all the stuff about the quiet carriage. But yeah, it's quite fun. I don't know that I'm going to watch any more of it, but it was all right.
I think I will watch the rest of it. I did think it's so generic a little bit, like the whole storyline.
Yeah.
That it's a bit like the butterfly of this genre of disappearing people.
You're right.
If you missed the butterfly discussion, the legendary Russell T. Davis butterfly segment of our live podcast, do try it. But
it's a little bit butterfly-esque. Synonym.
We have 2 minutes left before we get thrown out of the studio, so we will end that there. What else is on this week? Let's have a quick look.
Bridgerton's back on Thursday, part two, the second chunk of the current season four of Bridgerton. There's a Danny Dyer thing.
I've watched
Caravan Parks and Sky. Scrubs, back on Thursday.
The Scrubs, and we'll probably be covering that on Pilot Plus.
The aforementioned We Might Regret This Wednesday, BBC Two on...
Very funny, check it out.
Very funny. Oh, Monarch Legacy of Monsters. I know all about that, having attended the Apple Santa Monica launch event. And Monarch Legacy of Monsters Season 2, Apple TV, Friday, the 27th of February, with Kurt Russell and Wyatt, his actual
son. And not to mention King Kong and Godzilla.
Exactly. The Stolen Girl, you know, the talk about disappearing people storylines. Do you remember that one with the kid going on the play date?
Yes.
And then
yes.
disappearing? That's going on ITV1 from Wednesday, because that was originally on Disney Plus. So if you haven't got a subscriber to this page, you can see it on. And that's a really gripping, actually. I would say that's an above average person disappearing thriller in the annals of all of those shows.
Okay.
Yeah.
Marvellous. What topic of the week?
Okay, so I really enjoyed Paradise, that first episode, but I have to go Dirty Business.
Dirty Business, yes.
Paradise for me, but Dirty Business was well worth your time. That is it for this week's podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. If you would like to send us your messages, your letters, feel free to send them in. It is pilottv@empiremagazine.com. Follow us on the social medias, and of course, review this podcast only if you're going to give it 5 stars. If you want to give it less than 5 stars, then please review another podcast. It's goodbye from me. It's goodbye from Kay. It's goodbye from BoydBot2000. We will see you next week for more fun when... Oh, God. hardly. Let's see what's happening next week. Marshals, which is another Yellowstone spin-off, that comes to Paramount Plus. Young Sherlock comes to Prime. Vladimir, as Boyd mentioned, comes to Netflix. Ted is back, and so is Outlander. I don't know what we're going to do, but you'll find out.
And we're definitely not doing Ted.
We're definitely not doing Ted. It's not happening.
It's no. Exciting. Sorry, let's see Ted. What you're going to review.
Yeah, let's see. Boyd Bot out.